Oh. Jayam Vishnavad Paramahamsa Paribhraja Acharya Ashtapan Sri Srimad Nityananda Uboi Charanara Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Vedanta Prabhupada Jayam Vishnavad Paribhraja Acharya Ashtapan Sri Srimad Nityananda Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Iskandi Viti Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Naam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai To the whole Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shvashari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shramakam Radhakam Girigovardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Maya Purnabhati Dham Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Jumana Mai Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tosi Devi Ki Jai Shamaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Nitai Go Pramanandi All glories to the Assembly All glories to the Assembly All glories to the Assembly Shri Guru and Guru Mao Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutave Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharine in every sage of Sri Guru. A few days ago, a lecture was sent to me by Srila Prabhupada. I was very inspired by it, and I thought we could read parts of it and discuss it. It's about how a devotee deals with reverses. It's insightful, but I would say maybe more than insightful or equally insightful is the sweetness of this. Prabhupada explains this to me. So Krishna, he is so nice. Yes, he is the all-attractive. He hypnotizes his devotee. He's going to go on and explain it. The hypnotism is that even though his devotee suffers, interfere with the relationship, they accept it. Just like the Pandavas. The Pandavas, they were Krishna's friend. Arjuna was all brother. Arjuna was very intimate to him. Four brothers, they were also Krishna's friend. And Kunti, the Pandava's mother, she happened to be the aunt of Krishna. So they were all well established in relation with Krishna, but as a result, they were banished for 12 years. They lost the game, so they were banished. And their wife Draupadi was insulted. They could not insult her, but they tried to insult her. And they lost their kingdom, and they were banished for 12 years. So Narada Muni met Krishna. And he started speaking to Krishna with a little criticism. My dear sir, I don't know if you actually the proper language. My dear sir. It's my dear lord. But maybe in British, lord, sir, lady. We were young devotees. In England, Subhadra was known as Lady Subhadra. Lord Jagannath was known as Lord Jagannath, so that's the British lords and ladies. We didn't really get imported to America. Lady Subhadra. Lord Jagannath. Lords and ladies. My dear sir, Krishna, by becoming your devotee, the Pandavas are very happy. They have lost their kingdom. Their wife is insulted, and now they are banished for 12 years. So, it is a very good thing. The Prabhupada's laughing. So, Narada Muni's like, saying to Krishna, basically, they're your friends and you allow this to happen. How can this be right? Narada Muni goes, huh? But the wonderful thing I see, in spite of all these inconveniences, they have increased their love for you. What is wrong with you? Most people in a situation like that might find it difficult to come closer to God. Afraid of his call. So Narada Muni, he is astonished. What kind of hypnotism do you do? I do not know. In spite of being placed in so much inconvenience, their love for you has increased. That is the position of a pandit. This is Krishna consciousness. Here is the translation of that verse. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reaction of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his right. Not only does he not complain, take it in a special way. Not complaining is good, but you take it to another way. The devotee, pure devotee, if they are put into difficulty, they take it, quote, oh, it is Krishna's grace. It is Krishna's grace. A lot of us, after the event, we see how it unfolds, after suffering through it, then we might say, you know, a month later, 2 months later, oh, it was Krishna's mercy, because we see the result. It's a little less common, especially in the beginning, to see everything as Krishna's mercy. Well, we may try to see it. Prabhupada's saying pure devotee doesn't see it that way, because pure devotee only sees everything is Krishna's. Everything that Krishna does is his love. And sometimes we may do something stupid, and then we get mad at Krishna. Have you ever done that? Cut your finger or burn your finger. Krishna, why did you let me do it? And if you were asking Krishna, he could just say, because you weren't paying attention. So it's not that we would take that, or this is Krishna's arrangement for suffering. We have to take it as our stupidity. One time, some devotees were coming to Bhatiyatra from, I believe, Arizona. It was very early, 70 or 71. And their car broke down. They came late. They may have even missed. Why were you late? And they said, oh, it's Maya, Prabhupada. Our car broke down. Prabhupada said, why? Are you blaming Maya for your negligence? Why are you blaming Maya for your negligence? So what Prabhupada's saying here can't be taken globally, like whatever happens, suffering, oh, it must be Krishna loves me. No, you may have been negligent. You may have done something wrong, and you're getting reactions. And of course, devotees will learn from that. Oh, I learned from this. It's Krishna's mercy because I learned from it, but we shouldn't say Krishna did it. Or Krishna made me, you know, not service the car, so I learned a lesson from the car. But you could think, well, it was good, now I learned a lesson, but not that directly Krishna inspired me from within to do something. Although it could happen, generally we would. The devotee, pure devotee, if they are put into difficulty, they take it. Oh, it is Krishna's grace. It is Krishna's grace. Tatenu kam kam sushamiksha mano munjana evatme kutam vipakam. They take it in this way. Krishna, I was to suffer 100 times more than this due to my bad activities in my past life. But you are giving me a little out of it. So it is your grace. So a devotee never takes it in any. generally, I've seen interesting. Once a devotee parked his car in front of the temple in San Diego, and near the beach, just in those days, there were like rowdy teenagers at the beach. And it's changed a little bit. Real estate got higher, and moved to some other place. So, they broke the window of a devotee's car. And I guess in those days you would steal the stereo. So he came into the temple, he was really upset, and he was chanting a mantra. I don't know if you've ever chanted this mantra. It goes like this. Why me? Why me? I didn't deserve it. He chanted that mantra. Why me? I didn't deserve it. And the funny thing about that mantra is, I think he was saying, why couldn't they have done it to another car? Why my car? So that kind of goes as the second line of that mantra, why me? Why not somebody else? So I always remember that when I think of this verse, because this is interesting. Krishna, why me? I don't deserve it. And the pure devotee thinks, Krishna, I deserve worse. You're very kind. It's actually inconceivable from the ordinary perspective of anything. But even for us, it's not necessary. I was in Los Angeles for a moment speaking on this verse. He said, just like your throat was meant to be cut, but now you're a devotee, you get a little scratch. You get a little scratch, you're upset, it hurts a little bit, but you're supposed to think, actually, maybe my head was meant to be cut. Partially cut. Something, as Prabhupada said, 100 times more serious. And the devotee thinks, thank you, Krishna. And then the other thing, how a devotee thinks, and of course you can't imitate it. But the devotee thinks, I deserve it. Not only do I deserve it, I deserve it. I deserve it. Not like, why me? What did I do to deserve this? Let's go look at the record from your last 1 million lives. We'll find plenty of things you did to deserve it. That's how a devotee thinks. Then, if you even want to take it to another level, not even karmic reaction for sin, but just my heart is heavy. I deserve it for not being Krishna. Mahaprabhu once said that I should have killed myself long ago, but I'm shameless and I didn't. He said, why should I kill myself? Because I'm living in this world and I don't have friends. Taking the part of an ordinary person. I don't have love and I'm maintaining my body. So on that level, and on that level, a devotee thinks, I don't have love and I'm still eating and resting and living as you kill yourself. Of course, we don't recommend that you should kill yourself, but Mahaprabhu was having that sense that this is not right. I'm maintaining my body and I have no love. I don't even deserve to live. Of course, we're living to become purified. But there's that sentiment. So sometimes you see a devotee will say, I'm sinful, and we're reading this, and we're saying, no, you're not. You're not doing anything sinful. But the devotee's thinking, oh yeah, 1 second, I forgot Krishna. So, a little different with a pure devotee when they're saying, I deserve this. Because I'm not a pure devotee. Not that we can imitate, but we have to understand it. Because we're trying to go in that direction. We're maybe not on the freeway taking a non-stop flight, but at least we have to know. That's how it works. And I could say from my own experience, I always would think, when something's happening and I don't understand Krishna why, I always have this little drama going on. Well, I go back to God and I say, Krishna, remember that time this happened and then that happened and it was one thing after another and this and that. Why? All I'm trying to do is serve you. And Krishna says, you know why? You really want to know why? And he says, if that that didn't happen to you, you wouldn't be right here talking to me about it. You're on some beach in Jamaica. But because that happened, that's why you're here. That's my personal realization. And I always think, if whatever I'm going through, if I'm going to ask Krishna why, he's going to say that this is needed. The other thing I've learned from studying this is that Krishna's not vengeful, although he's. If you study Krishna Lila and you study how Yoga Maya arranges the Lila, it becomes very clear that everything is simply arranged for Krishna to reciprocate. That's all. Yoga Maya is the expert. She knows how to do everything only for that purpose, to increase rasa, to increase love. Because Krishna is addicted to love, and he's addicted to serving his devotees. He's addicted to love. So then something bad happens to the devotee. Wait a minute. If Krishna loves to serve, he loves to love, why is this happening? It's a purport explanation by Krishna. And then this is answered. And he says, Krishna loves to serve his devotees. Okay, Krishna. You love to serve your devotees. Where's the mansion? Where's the Mercedes? I'm waiting. It's on my list. But then Krishna says, well, I'm not as stupid as you are to give you everything you want. So then it doesn't look like, but Krishna thought you loved me. Yeah, I'm not giving it to you because I love you. If I didn't love you, I would give it to you. So we have to understand that everything that Krishna's doing is because he loves us, even if it doesn't look like he's doing something because he loves us. Then Prabhupada said something very heavy. You can take it however you want to take it. Prabhupada said it. Prabhupada said, a pure devotee, again, we can't imitate this, Prabhupada said, a pure devotee will never ask Krishna for anything. He'll ask for pure bhakti, but never anything material. And then Prabhupada said something amazing, and I've only heard him say it once. He said, even if he's starving, he won't ask Krishna for food. I heard that, and then I just kind of fell off my seat. Inconceivable. I don't want to ask Krishna for anything. Even I'm starving, I don't want to ask Krishna. And Krishna, all he wants to do is take care of you. And because you know that, that's another reason you don't want to ask. Because you know that Krishna wants to do that. And if Krishna's not giving, there's no giving. That's not the reason. Not because he doesn't like me or necessarily that I'm sinful, although I may see that. But this angle of vision is always, well, this is Krishna loves me, so whatever happens, it's not something foolish that I've done. It's a manifestation of just love. And then when you're going through it that way, you just think, okay, lessons, there's so many lessons that Krishna wants me to learn. Austerity, the wealth of the Brahmins. Maybe I wasn't doing enough austerity. And Krishna said, okay, you're going to do austerity for the next week. And he creates situations. Austerity, Prabhupada said, the word tapasya, tapa means heat, but Prabhupada said tapasya many times. He said suffering, bodily pain, for spiritual pain. So one time, which is like a few months ago, you know, I haven't been in Alachua, like, I haven't actually been in one place that long, in a few months, in like 20 years. So because of COVID, I've been in the United States, but I've been there. And after like, I was here like 6 months, I was thinking, you know, traveling is really difficult. So I was there. And that's how I get my austerity points. you give a class? I go, okay. And they say, this is the time for a class, which is 3 a.m. my time. I go, perfect, okay. They're like, really? I go, yeah. Well, I was just praying for some upstairs. Okay, so we'll get up at 2:30, and then we'll get ready. And we'll get class. And that's not quite enough. Yes, you know, sometimes. Yeah, Bhagavatam. So sometimes Krishna may say, life's too easy, we need a little tapasya. So I always, my thought was always, let me do the tapasya first, because I have control of that. Krishna wants to put his tapasya, I don't know what he's going to do. So like, you know, I'll do enough and say, Krishna, I did enough, is that okay? You don't have to like, and that seems to work. Then you get to choose your tapasya, but if Krishna puts your tapasya, you don't have to choose. It's one way. So we'll continue. Krishna, I was to suffer, this is how it's Krishna, I was to suffer 100 times more than this due to my bad activities in my past life. But you are giving me a little out of this, just a little reaction. Therefore, Narayana Parasarena Kupasthana. 6:17. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any conditions of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Heavenly planets, it's all on the same. Sum up. It's interesting. So, if he is put in the severest type of difficulty, he's never upset. Just see the promises. That is the effect of Krishna consciousness. I have a few other things I want to read, then I want to open it up. And I would really appreciate if any of you have stories of some suffering that you've been through this. And these kinds of stories, they build faith. They build life. I just want to make an announcement. For a very long time, I have thought we need a book called Stories of Faith, because there's so many stories in the lives of devotees we don't know about that would increase our faith. Because faith is fundamental to a gradual development of faith. And if we could hear all the stories, Krishna would become more real in our lives. And my dear godbrother, Gurdwara, we did a lot of service together, and a lot of times you'd have these miraculous things happen. Or a lot of times you would totally do everything wrong, but it would work out right because Krishna would just like take it back. You ever like that? Do everything wrong, and at the last moment Krishna catches you falling, puts it all together. So as young devotees, that was kind of like a normal day. And Maharaj used to call it the Krishna factor. That's the Krishna, you know, it was, you know, this was not supposed to happen, but due to the Krishna factor, you know, the security guard fell asleep, the door opened, and we went into the football game and sold 100 Krishna. It was supposed to happen, but the Krishna, you know, like Yogamaya put the guards asleep, you know, something like that. So this is the temporary working title, is the Krishna factor, Stories of Faith and Bhakti. And maybe this is a... I just think this would be an amazing book. So if any of you have stories of faith, stories that you think would be so amazing that they would, or maybe not so amazing, but they would build the faith of other devotees, then let me know as we're compiling these stories. And I think there's going to be many volumes. I think there's so many stories. And my intuition tells me that this would be incredibly faithful. So I just want to read a few things and then ask you if you'd like to share any of your stories. stories about Krishna too. The Krishna factor is what you hear about it. And I'll share one of my stories, Krishna factor. This is a beautiful letter, really, really beautiful letter, written in 1972. Sometimes Krishna may put us into some difficulty just to purify us and force us to advance in Krishna consciousness. The devotee should always see his difficulty in this light, that Krishna is so kind upon me for creating this condition of struggle. Thus he is relieving me of so many billions of lifetimes of sinful reactions by this very insignificant and temporary condition of suffering. I think Prabhupada was the world expert at taking a mountain and creating a molehill out of it. We were expert at taking a molehill and making a mountain. And the sadhu is expert at taking a molehill and taking a mountain and creating a mountain. So many times we would be in situations which we felt extremely difficult to deal with. And Prabhupada would say something and kind of like dismiss it. What's your problem? That's nothing. And one time Prabhupada said, with one kick, I could kick out all your problems. No problem. Prabhupada, I'm in Maya. It's so difficult. I can't follow. One kick, I could kick it out. So sometimes Prabhupada would have these one-liners that would just like kick out all the Maya. And it's like, oh, everything's fine now. So I think this is one of these. You're suffering. And the one-liner. No, what's actually happening is billions of lifetimes of sins are being purified. That's how little suffering is happening. And then another nice meditation. The Prabhupada was asked, Srila Prabhupada, when we go back to Godhead, will we remember this? No. At most, it's kind of like, you ever kind of reading and you're not out and you wake up kind of like, what happened? I was reading. At most, it's going to be like, you're with Krishna and like you're out 1 month. What happened? It's like, you never left. I was reading the other day that Uddhava, he was in Dwarka, and then he went back to Dwarka to go look. And it was like, he never left. It's nice to think that all our problems in the material world, when you go back to God, it's like, what happened? Was I suffering? Was I God? Oh, whatever. It's like, it's nothing. So, I could read more, but I would like to stop here. This is about Chitrakesa. This is such a beautiful story. A devotee, he accepts any condition of life as a blessing from the Lord. Since Chitraketu was a devotee of the Lord, he was not at all disturbed by the curse of Mother Parvati. He knew very well that one suffers or enjoys the results of one's past misdeed as ordained by Daivanetra, superior authority, or the agents of the Supreme Personality of God. In other words, Mother Parvati curses him, you're going to become a demon, which is sort of like that. It's going to happen. No problem. Chitraketu was the original. Whatever. The modern adaption of it's amazing. He was not, so what Prabhupada saying here, it was like there was no reaction. Nothing negative. No lack of acceptance. He knew that he had not committed any offense at the lotus feet of Lord Shiva or the goddess Parvati, yet he had been punished. And this means that the punishment has been ordained. You're trying to serve Krishna, you're just doing devotional service, something happens, some difficulty. Don't think like Chitraketu. It must be Krishna's difficulty. I'm following as best I can. Thus the king did not mind it. A devotee is naturally so humble and meek that he accepts any condition of life as a blessing from the Lord. This verse is sent to the national anthem of the devotee's life. I deserve this. So, with your permission, I'd like to tell my story. We'll go around. Maybe we'll be granted extra time for this story. Maybe. Trying to arrange this story. We'll see. It depends if the book works. So, in 1970, in November of 1970, I was asked to become temple president of Vancouver, Canada. And I really don't like managing that much, and I was only 20, and I had been a devotee 8 months, so it was a bit of a challenge. And the devotees there were, I would just say, they were heavyweights. They were hard to do. I won't mention their names, but they were very difficult to do, which is quite an understatement. To get the scenario. So, and I'm from Southern California. That was the first time in my life I saw snow. That was like strange to see it, and I couldn't understand why anyone would live in a climate that was as cold as a walking refrigerator. That was actually how I felt. It didn't make sense. So, we had no money. We didn't know how we were going to pay the rent. We didn't know. We didn't have warm clothes. And the difficulties just mounted on. I didn't ask to be there. I didn't want to be there. And my only hope was that when I went to apply for my green card, I wouldn't get it. If I didn't get it, then I would have honorably returned to the temple I came from, San Francisco, which was an amazing temple, and I loved it. Fired up. If ever a temple was fired up, that was fire. So I was always thinking, just a matter of time, I'll go back because all the people, all the American students, the young Americans were going to Canada to escape the draft. At that time, it was a draft. You didn't join the army. You got a letter that said, "Dear General, show up at this place at this time to get your, those ladies didn't have to worry about it, get your checkup for entering the army, which meant you're going to Vietnam to either be killed or kill somebody." So a lot of these young men, they went to Canada because somehow or other, if you're in Canada, you won't be drafted. So I went to the lawyer and said, "I have to apply for a green card. My GBC wants me to do this. It wants me to stay here." And the lawyer said, "You're never going to get it because of all the people coming up." I said, "That was the best thing I've heard all day." I was so happy. But I thought, you know, I have to go through the process because it's my duty. Because I am the temple president, it's my duty at least to go through the process. So I did everything, filled out all the paperwork, got recommendations, this and that. And the way it worked in those days, it's different than now, the way it worked in those days is you drive about a half hour from Vancouver, you drive to the border, you go into Washington State, you turn around, you just drive up. It's a drive-through visa, drive-through green card. I never got out of my car. So I drive up, and I was thinking, this is the day. It's going to be the happiest day in like the last year. I give him all the paperwork. He starts speaking to me in French, and I say a few words in French because I studied French. Actually, I had no idea what he was saying. I said, you know, "Bonsoir." And speaking in French. So he went back, and from my memory, he went into his office for 3 minutes and came back, and I was, yes. He looked at the papers and said, "Loser, there's no need to even take time." So he comes back, gives me the paper, smiles, and he gives me the green card. And at that moment, I felt like Krishna was sitting in the car, laughing his head off at me. And the realization I had was, well, Krishna, I guess you want me to be here, don't you? And from that point on, I was completely Krishna. Because I knew at that point, this was Krishna. So that's my story. I had another story, but I don't want to that was total hell and I learned so much. Some other story. Yes, whoever.
In 2019, I went to India, and I was going to be there for 10 days, and I was doing Kirti, and so there were a lot of festivals, and there were a lot of devotees there that I was meeting, and so forth. And on day 3, I lost my passport. And so immediately my entire trip, it was only 10 days, but pretty much from the start, I was like crying. I was like, oh God, I'm going to be stuck in India forever. I don't know how to get out. And so fortunately, the devotees that I was with, they were with me the entire time we went. We were in Vrindavan also. And so I left this magical place where everything is perfect and amazing. And I took these devotees who had come from other countries away from their spiritual master. They were there to see in Vrindavan. And they went with me to Delhi. All this trouble. I was just crying the whole time. I was like, I'm ruining everything. And I got to the embassy. I got my passport, paid a lot of money for the extra. And it was supposed to be a long process to get the visa back because it was an emergency one. And as soon as I come out of the embassy, I have like 20 missed calls. And the devotees are calling me back and they're like, we found your passport. We found it. And it was under the persons that I was with in their ashram. And I was like, ah, okay. So I ran back into the embassy. I sprinted, cut the line, cut all these people off. And I was like, I ran back in, and I was like, stop, stop, stop. Like, don't do anything, don't do anything. And they were like, ooh, okay. Well, we already did it, so you have to take it. But the good thing is that since you have your old passport, you don't have to worry about the visa, which was really the hard part. And I was like, perfect. I don't even care. Like, take all my money, whatever you want. This perfect, whatever. Let me get back to Vietnam. And so I went back, and everything was good, and I was having a good time again, and all these festivals, it was amazing. And then my last day, I got to celebrate the Garden Puja there, and then that was my last day. So that night, I left to go to the airport, and my flight was really late, so I got to the airport. And then they didn't let me leave. And so I'm at the airport, and the devotees who dropped me off, they couldn't go inside the airport. So I'm like yelling at these like very old kind of scary government Indian men, and I'm like, let me in. Like, they told me it's okay, and they don't let me in. And I was there for 3 extra hours even though my plane like came, went, whatever. So I was crying, and I called the person that I was with, Vishnupriya, and I was like, I don't know what to do, and I'm really, really crying. And she was like, come back to Vrindavan. And so I was like, okay. And I got back, and I called my boss at work, because that was really the thing. I was worried, like, I lost my passport, so I was really stressed out about that. And then I got it, okay, it's fine, now I'm stuck in India, because they literally won't let me leave, so I'm really worried about that. I have to get back to my job, and my dog, and all these things. And I called my boss, and they ended up saying, like, no problem. Like, it's an emergency situation, take as long as you need, like, it doesn't matter, just get home safe. And so that's not a problem. And then my mom ended up going to Austin to take care of my dog, and so that's not a problem. And because I got to go back to Vrindavan, the very next day was Prabhupada's disappearance day.
Wow.
And so it was a really, really special day. And so because I lost my passport, like, and it felt so, like, so much suffering, so many good things came out of it. At the very end, it was very good.
Pretty well. Definitely Prabhupada's arrangement. He was trying to get you to lose it twice. That's for another book called Welcome to India. I think every devotee has about 108 Welcome to India stories. My favorite Welcome to India story is you get in the taxi cab and they say, meter not working. And I pull out a screwdriver and say, I fix meters. And they look at me like,
well, I don't have a story, but I have something that really touched my heart, and it was from 2 devotees. I'm sure there's many, many devotees around the world, but these 2 particular ladies told me, I asked them, I said, you know, you've been through really extreme difficulties on so many years from childhood onward, and yet you've just been diligent with every aspect of your spiritual life. You know, can you talk about that a little? And both these devotees told me that they're so absolutely 100% grateful for every single thing that happened to them. The reason being that it's what made them who they are today. Kind of like putting iron in a fire. I always feel very inspired by that and hope that maybe one lifetime I might get to that where I can say that I'm glad that everything happened to me because I am who I am today.
That's a good meditation when it's happening. It's what I need right now to be who I need to be. Krishna wants me. You want to hear something interesting? My godbrothers, he gave people cards. He gave them five cards and he said, write down five difficulties you've been through and the lessons you learned from each other. Put those cards in front of you. So everyone had written five cards in front of them. After they did that, he said, now if you could relive your life and not have to go through those horrific experiences, which one would you not go through? Just pick up the card. Not one person picked up any card. Why? He said, because I am who exactly what he said. I would not be who I am today had I not gone through that. Of course, when you look back, you think, hope I never have to go through that again. Could I get the lesson without the suffering?
If you were sitting at a table, a round table, let's say, and everyone put on cards and put them in the center of the table with all their problems, and you saw everybody, what would you do? Would you take your own problems or take theirs? And pretty much everybody took their own problems.
Who else would like to share? Something you learned from difficulty? Something you didn't learn that you should have learned?
Started coming around Krishna consciousness. It was relatively recently, and it was when I was graduating college, and it was in the middle of the year, or I guess it was December, and I needed to get out of the sublease, and I didn't think I would, so I just didn't try. And I had kind of just been following signs and intuition, and just very blindly ended up at Krishna House. So I didn't know if I was going to move in or not. I had no idea what I was signing up for. I went on the trip to Georgia with them. Okay, these people are amazing. And then I went home and I heard all from, my family how I'm crazy and I'm moving home and it's time to come home and get a job and all these things. And so they encouraged me to put my place up to sublease, which of course I was going to do, but I didn't think I was going to find anyone. So I was, maybe I'll stay in Gainesville and just bum it out or something and avoid family responsibilities, these things. And within a week, I found a subleaser. Just having focused my desire on my improvement to Krishna's, which is so much of Krishna's mercy because in the middle of a pandemic, in a matter of a week, in the middle of a semester, or in the middle of the school year, finding a subleaser was incredible. And then I had also, I had just gotten a kitten a couple months before on a whim. And so I had this responsibility and I can't bring in a pet with me to Krishna House. I didn't really have an attachment to her, but it was my responsibility to take care of her. And a few months back, she had a lot of medical issues, so I had to drive to Jacksonville and got her treated, and this was before I was a devotee or aspiring devotee. And so she should have passed, but she didn't. And then after I started coming around the house, when I went home for Christmas break, she had smelled a Christmas lily. It was Christmas, and those are highly deathly for kittens and cats. Just smelling them, they die. And so she had immediate liver failure. But I was also able to
told her and chant her name, like chant the holy name for her.
Nice.
So it was her, her karma, I guess, her sweet karma, to have a short life with the cat. And it was also really sweet because that was a way that my family was kind of pushing me to not join the movement and not become a devotee and not move into the house. This is their way of controlling me. You're a horrible person for giving up your responsibility to take care of this cat. We won't take care of this cat for you. So it was just, it was so freeing on top of a bunch of other little things that Krishna helped me get to where I am.
I think the same person who made you lose your passport is the same person who got your house, your apartment sublet, right? What do you think? You know, there's so many stories when people are ready to become Krishna conscious that everything just, it all happens. Like, you're just watching it like, whoa. Whoa, okay. I guess I'm supposed to do this. So, very common story. Thank you for sharing.
On the gutter on Burton Street, I remember the prophet said, he said, the point of death is very important to the Krishna. And so I started to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And immediately, like a bolt out of the blue, there was a convention of surgeons here at the scene. There were doctors everywhere. It was like the universal form of doctors. And everything turned out to be good except the voice of the shopping. So that's a true story.
Prabhupada.